from the Star Reynolds Sports Desk. Your 93.3 KJR-FM Sports Headlines.
All righty, boys and girls, headlines on a Thursday night live from Jimmy's on First, brought to you by our friends at VenueKings.com.
You don't know anything. You don't know squat, you stupid idiot.
You want to get to the game tonight at T-Mobile? $12 gets you in the door at VenueKings.com. Be sure and use code SOFTY for an even bigger discount. But $12 gets you in the door tonight for the game. Kraken win last night, their first three-game winning streak in franchise history. 3-2 over Colorado. Eberle, Gord, Cole Lind all scoring last night. The guys are 9-7. They're past 16 games, and they are at Minnesota tomorrow. 4:30 pre, 5 o'clock face-off right here on Sports Radio, 93.3 KJR-FM.
Speaking of Minnesota, their basketball team is jumping all over Memphis right now. 33-18 with a minute 30 left to go in Game 3's first quarter. That series tied up at one game apiece. Mavericks and Jazz starting at 6 o'clock tonight with that series tied at 1. And the Warriors have a 2-0 lead on the Nuggets. They play at 7 tonight in Denver.
What else we got? NCAA Zag big man Chet Holmgren. No surprise, the presumed number one pick in the NBA draft, declaring today for the NBA draft. And two-time AFL Player of the Year, Raiders' first Super Bowl quarterback, Daryl LaMonica, has passed away at the age of 80 years old.
Want to watch Storm basketball this year, Dave?
Yeah, I do.
All right.
I do.
Well, they have reached agreement with Amazon Prime Video to stream nearly the entire season, home and road, to the entire state of Washington. But the play-by-play guy sucks.
He's a moron. So you got to have Amazon Prime to watch the Storm?
No, that's just another
way.
Another
way. Good. All right. Well,
so
what's the first way to watch him? On, like, Root?
Yeah.
Okay, good. All right. What else we got? Mariners tonight, they're going for a four-game winning streak and a sweep of the Rangers. Logan Gilbert last night was unbelievable. His ERA is down to .54. The M7-5, Marco Gonzalez versus Taylor Hearn at 6:40 this evening. Speaking of baseball, let's get to baseball with Booney right now.
Coming to you live from our Elliott Avenue studios of Sports Radio 93.3 KJR-FM. It's time for our weekly conversation with former Mariners All-Star Brett Boone. Brought to you by Venue Kings. Visit VenueKings.com for all your ticket needs. Now with Booney, here's Softy and Dick.
You had the root on the brain because I was staring at T-Mobile Park there.
Yeah.
It's Fox 13.
There you go.
Fox
right.
13 is
Fox
the way
13.
To watch it over the air TV.
Or Dick Fain can just FaceTime you directly from the sideline.
For the right price, I would, actually.
Exactly.
For the right price, I would.
You better. All right, well, joining us right now on the radio show, every Thursday, courtesy of our friends at VenueKings.com, he's got his own podcast out as well with our friends at DraftKings. It's our friend Brett Boone, Baseball with Booney. How are you, pal? What's going on?
Boys, how you doing? What's
good.
Up, Softy?
Well, we're good, man. Tell me about
how you doing as well.
I'm doing well, man. I'm doing well. I'm not on vacation this week.
Yeah, how about that? It's a shocker. You know, there's miracles performed every day on this radio station. He's back. Well, let's talk about what this baseball team is up to, man. Let's start with Logan Gilbert, dude. .54 ERA, his first couple of starts. And going back to last year, the guy is just continuing kind of the domination. What do you make of what you see from this kid, dude?
Most impressed. From 2021 to 2022, I know you. I've texted you a few times, Softy. I'll tell you what, he matured really quick. When he came up last year, had the stuff, had the stature. You know, big, tall kid. But I'll tell you what I've seen from last year to this year with the control of his off speed pitches and his location, and the demeanor. I talk about demeanor a lot. It's really important when you get to the big league level. How you're perceived on the mound, not only by your own team, but by the opposing team. This guy looks like he's been there. Give me the ball. And I'll tell you what, I'm really impressed with Gilbert thus far. 2-0, .454. Wow. This really excites me.
So what's the upside there? I mean, obviously top of the rotation upside, but are we talking potentially, are you seeing like Cy Young candidate type upside out of this guy?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's way too early. I mean, we're in mid-April. I don't want to get ahead of myself here. The thing that's really encouraging, 15 punch-outs, he's got one walk.
Yep.
And for a young kid, like I mentioned at the top, you know, that struggles last year, I thought he struggled with locating his breaking ball. To have one walk this early in the season, pretty darn impressive. As far as future, yeah, he's definitely got the stuff. He's got the swagger about him. I just like something about him now when he takes the mound. I just like, I can't pinpoint it, but once again, it goes back to demeanor, and it's really important.
Well, but really the question is, do you think he'll be a first or a second ballot Hall of Famer?
No, without a doubt, first.
Gotcha. Okay.
Without a doubt, no.
Just want to make sure.
I'll tell you what, early in the season, I'm pleasantly surprised. I didn't think he was going to be this far along.
No, he's a stud. He's got great stuff. There's no question about it. But hitters are going to, you know, adapt to him, right? That's the game here. There's this constant chess game, especially for young pitchers. And maybe it's becoming less of a problem now because the guy's making, what, his 28th start in baseball. Or, excuse me, his next start will be 28 in baseball. So, usually early on, there's no book. Maybe the pitcher has the advantage. But how would you approach Logan Gilbert if you were a hitter? And then what does he have to do to make sure he can survive in this game?
Well, he's got to continue to adjust to the hitters, because you're going to face those tough lineups. You're going to be facing a White Sox, a Boston Red Sox, a Yankee lineup, a Houston Astro lineup, fully healthy. And these guys are going to be watching film on you. They're going to watch your tendencies, and he's going to have to adjust just as hitters we have to adjust. I think the really good thing, he's got some cover this year. You bring over Robbie Ray, who's the Cy Young Award winner. I think that gives a young pitcher, developing pitcher like Gilbert, potentially number one one day. It gives him some cover to continue to develop. Yeah. Robbie Ray is going to take the brunt. He's the big guy at the top of the rotation. And I think Robbie Ray, he's like a bulldog. I mean, I think he's ready for that role to be that legitimate number one guy. And it gives Gilbert cover, and he can kind of just do his thing under the radar for a while. And believe me, the hitters that he's faced so far this year, he is not under the radar to them. But as the season goes on, these guys, especially these, like I said, these top-tier lineups that you're going to face throughout the course of the year, they're going to make an adjustment. They're going to have film on him. They're going to see his tendencies. They're going to figure it out. He's got a counter. When they figure it out, he's got to counter and mix it up a little bit. But great stuff, great future.
And the same thing's going to happen with Matt Brash as well. And we've basically seen the same numbers first outing to the second outing, 5 1/3, 2 earned runs in both, gave up a home run in both, 5 Ks and 1 6 in the other. The only difference between the Houston game was, A, he got some run support. He got 7 runs behind him, so he picked up the win. And, B, how about the 6 walks and the way he was able to kind of just strand those guys all over the place?
Brash is—he's kind of a different. He's a little more raw, and he's just getting it and firing it. I mean, I know playing defense behind him, I would love that, but he's got electric stuff. We talked last week a little bit about he short arms the ball. What I mean by that, Brett Saberhagen used to do it. When you go from point A to point B, it's quicker than your average starting pitcher. It's tough to pick up that breakable. I know the hitters right now are really confused with the ball coming out of his hand, and that's why he's been able to get away with being a little bit wild here early in the season. He's just getting by on stuff right now. When he learns to control the zone a little bit more, man, there's another guy that I'm excited about. This guy's got electric stuff. Probably got the best stuff on that staff.
Right.
He's just not quite as honed in. Gilbert's a little more, you know, a little more seasoned than Brash at this point, but if Brash gets going and gets a little more seasoning, man, sky's the limit for him as well.
I'm trying to figure out how in the hell the Padres let this guy go. I mean, talk to me about that. He was the player to be named later in the Taylor Williams deal. I mean, he was basically a nobody. The guy is a player to be named later, and now he's in the Mariner rotation with maybe one of the best pitches in the freaking major leagues. How do the Padres let this guy walk? How'd they miss on him?
Well, Softy, I think you know, different guys hit different maturity levels at different times in their career. Maybe they weren't seeing what we're seeing right now. Sometimes the light bulb just goes on. It happens at different times for different people. I'm just glad we got him. I'm watching this Mariner team now, and before I came on, I was talking to your producer. I'm legitimately excited about this Mariners team, and then that's been the first time I can say that for probably the last 10 or 15 years. I watch this lineup. I watch how this rotation's setting up. I really like Castillo coming over in that from Tampa Bay. I think he brings a winning attitude that Tampa Bay has. That franchise is unbelievable how they continue to turn out great players with limited resources. I think having him right now closing, I think that brings a calm to the rest of the pen. He's been there. He's done that. He knows what it's like to be in a winning situation all the time. He brings something to this team. I really like him in the closing role right now. Steckenrider, Munoz. We talked about Munoz, man.
Yep.
This guy, he's throwing 103 miles an hour, you know? And I want to see him a little bit more because I've seen that electric velocity before. It's more than velocity at the big league level. But so far, so good. 10 punch outs in 5 innings. I don't have anything negative to say. You get to that starting lineup. We got professional hitters. We got Frazier at the top of the lineup. I love it. France is doing a great job. Suarez at this point in his career, I don't know if we're just going to say, all right, whatever he hits, he hits. He's going to give us 25, 30 home runs. Maybe that's who Suarez is at this stage of his career. Crawford, you got Haniger coming back as soon as he tests negative for the COVID. And hang in there on Winker. I know he's only hitting 158 right now. This guy's a pro at the end of the game, at the end of the day, at the end of the season. This guy's too good of a hitter, has too good of an approach. He's going to get hot sooner than later.
Jeez, you just mentioned the whole lineup. All right, see you, Bernie.
He pulled a Russell Wilson.
Thanks for
having
me, guys. See you next week.
Well, you know, and I think your excitement is well-founded. The Mariners tweeted out today, and Brett Boone's joining us, that, you know, they've got the best record in baseball, or the best record in the American League the last 60 games. They're 38-22. This is not just 2 weeks of good baseball. They've been playing good baseball since the end of last season. And we were talking earlier, Brett, about putting money down on this team to win this division. I mean, do you legitimately think that the gap is now closed between the Mariners and the Astros? And if there still is a gap, what is that gap?
You know, this early, I wouldn't bet against the Mariners at this point. From what I've seen in this first two weeks of the season, I wouldn't bet against the Mariners. I still think Houston's the giant you got to knock off. They've proven through the last 4 or 5 years that they're the best team in this division. But I think the Mariners significantly, from a year ago to this year, have closed the gap. I wouldn't bet against them. I'm not a believer in the Angels. I don't think they have the pitching to do it. And I know I think yesterday they were at the top of the division. Yeah. I don't think they're going to be in there in the long run, but I think this Mariner team's for real. We talked about Gilbert and Brash getting a little bit of cover from Robbie Ray at the top of the rotation. I think these two rookies, too, are going to have a chance to get some cover because they have a really good lineup now. You got guys that have been in the big leagues, work counts, don't strike out a lot. So these kids can develop, Rodriguez and Kelenic. They have a little bit of shade down at the bottom of the lineup where they can learn and don't have the pressure that they got to be the guy right now. You've got several guys in that lineup to be the guy. And we haven't even had Haniger recently. Haniger's going to come back. You know, he's kind of the face of that organization right now.
Right.
Now, that may change, but right now, you know, coming off 39 home runs last year, and he hasn't even been around the last 4 or 5 games. So add him to the mix. Kelenic and Rodriguez can have a little time to relax and breathe a little bit and learn what it's like to be a big league hitter.
Hey, Brett Boone with us, courtesy of Venue Kings. You mentioned Kelenic and Rodriguez. You were watching the game last night. I know you saw that 7th inning yesterday with back-to-back looking Ks by the two of them. Some would argue the strike zone was inflated, which it certainly was. I tend to look at the hole at bat and not just the out pitch, by the way. But what did you make of those two guys and those two ABs back-to-back specifically last night?
Well, that's experience, you know, and as a young player, you come to the big leagues and your layman thoughts are, okay, I'm a big leaguer now. They're not going to worry about me. I'm a no name. These big league pitchers are going to come right at me. And it's quite the opposite. I learned that lesson. I learned it the hard way. What these big league guys do is they're going to break and ball you to death. They know you're aggressive. They know you're young. They know you can hit the fastball. So when they throw you a fastball, they're just going to show it to you. That's my experience was, man, they threw me breaking ball every pitch, breaking ball, breaking ball, breaking ball, high fastball. Now it's the only fastball I'm going to see in the at-bat, so what am I doing? I'm hacking at it.
Yeah.
They're going to have to learn that the pressure's on the pitcher, especially in a big situation. That comes with time. That comes with maturity. In bases-loaded situation, you come to the plate, we tend to go, oh, I got to drive these runs in. No, this pitcher's in trouble. The pressure's on him. I need to step out, breathe, and go through the at-bat. That only comes with time and with experience. These guys are going to get plenty of experience, but right now they're going to get breaking ball to death. They're going to have to start sitting on some breaking ball, knocking the crap out of them to get back to being pitched like a normal hitter.
What would you tell Julio if he came to you in the dugout and he just struck out again on a pitch 4 inches outside the plate? Would you tell him to expand his zone, or would you say, no, just keep your eye as it is? Eventually you're going to get those calls.
Well, Nick, you know, my two-strike approach was different than most. The only reason I kind of did that and was extreme with that is I didn't want to have to think. All of a sudden, I crouched down, choked up on the bat just an inch. My brain automatically knew I was in two-strike mode. And that means swinging anything close. And the 2-0, you throw me a nasty breaking ball on the outside corner, I don't want that pitch. Right. I want to take that pitch. But with two strikes, I'm not going to go back to the bench and then say, oh, it was a great pitch, you know, get him next time. I don't want to get him next time. I want to be able to foul off that nasty pitch, wait for him to make a mistake in the middle of the plate. I don't know what to tell. Everybody's different. But you got to have an approach with two strikes that's something different, something you don't have to think about. That automatically, okay, when I go into this mode, I know I got to hit anything close. I'm not going to get rung up again, especially with ducks on the pond. So that's another part of the maturity process, another part of trial and error. And these guys, it stinks sometimes. I went through it. Most of us go through it. There's only so many Tatises and Acunas in the world. The rest of us kind of learn on the job and get our butt kicked a little bit before we get up and running and be an established big league hitter. Hey. These guys are going to be good. Tons of talent there. They got to learn.
Yeah, no doubt. And Bruni, Brett Boone with us, courtesy of VenueKings.com. You mentioned Mitch Haniger, by the way. Jerry DePoto was on with Ian Furness last week. I want to play this clip for you, Brett, and have you respond to it. Okay, to kind of translate this, when Jerry was asked about contract negotiations with Haniger. Go ahead, Jackson.
Mitch Haniger, priority to get him re-signed, yes. What's the status there?
I can't tell you.
Okay.
No idea. Would love to have Mitch spend his career.
I guess that's a better question.
Takes two to tango. you know, we love Mitch.
The Mariners want Mitch Haniger to be here long term.
Sure. Mitch is a great player. And he's been, when we have been good in my time with the Mariners, Mitch Haniger has been in the middle of it. He was in the middle of it in 2018 when we were an 89-win team. He was in the middle of it last year when we were a 90-win team. My guess is he's going to be in the middle of it this year when we anticipate being a playoff.
We lost you.
Brett, what do you make of that clip there from Mitch Haniger with you?
Oh, there we go. You're back. Just hearing that, he was kind of cavalier. Didn't have too much to say, kind of wishy. To me, coming out going, oh, that's our priority, that's what we need to do. You know, my history of negotiations and how they go, my experience. If he would come out, oh, we got to sign him, we got to do this, that I would be leery and go, they're probably not going to sign him. I think the Mariners have a lot of decisions to make. You know, you lose Seager, who was kind of the face of the organization, to retirement. You got what they see as a lot of young potential stars on the rise. What's Mitch? I think Mitch's 30, 32 years old. Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I think that's a behind-the-scenes budgetary decision that's going to be made from somebody up in the front office. I think Mitch Haniger's a really good player, a difference maker. He hit 39 home runs last year. Who knows? When you say two to tango, no. The club comes to you, they engage with you, and then you see if there's a deal there. So, I don't know. Get Mitch back in the field. Best right now to just...
All right, Boone, not sure if you can hear us or not. Having some problems on our line here at Jimmy's on First and Jackson. I cannot hear Brett on this end. So we will just let him go. We will get a break and come back with more from Jimmy's on First right here on Sports Radio KJR 93.3 FM.
The best NFL draft coverage in town kicks off April 28th, live from the VMAC. Brought to you by Hunt Services, Lakeland Village Golf Course, Hendrickas Organics, Chambers Bay Distillery, Half Lion Brewing Company, and Fox 13. Now back to Softy and Dick on Seattle's Sports Leader, 93.3 KJR FM.
Back here at Jimmy's on First, hanging out until 7 o'clock tonight. Big thanks to Brett Boone for joining us on the radio show before his phone went to kaput in a handbucket. There's cell phone problems all over the world today, by the way, and even former All-Stars are not immune to that stuff. So good to have Booney on the air with us today, courtesy of Venue Kings every single Thursday at 5 o'clock. Brett's got a podcast as well, brought to you by DraftKings. So wherever you find your favorite podcast, be sure and check that out.
And he's on Cameo, too.
You can have
him do a birthday reference for you.
He would have mentioned Mitch Haniger's coming up on his podcast tomorrow, so I'm looking forward to that. I wanted to get his thoughts on Seager, but obviously we had some problems there technically and couldn't pull it off, but he mentioned as well, you know, that, hey, the gap with the M's and the Astros is closing, no doubt about it.
He said, I think this Mariner team, for real, I wouldn't bet against them at this point. And this goes back to what we talked about at the beginning of the show. Like, where would you put your money right now legitimately on the AL West? Would you put it at the Mariners at like a plus 375, plus 400? Or do you put it on the Astros at minus 200? I mean, do the Astros really have an 8 times better chance to win this division based upon what we've seen this Mariner team do, not just this year, but in the past 60 games where they're 38-22? I just don't think you do.
Well, again, Vegas thinks they do, number one. And I think the difference, like I said earlier today, is that you've got a baseball team in Houston that's got a tremendous amount of players that have a lot more history, right? And that's just – and that's a fact. I mean, nobody can even really debate that. Now, do they have better young players than Houston has older players? Maybe, right? Yeah. We'll find out. But Verlander's been doing it forever. Odorizzi's been doing it for a long time. I think McCullers is on the 60-day DL, so he'll come back at some point. But between Bregman, Altuve, and Gurriel, they got guys on the roster that just don't have that experience that the Mariner players have. But, hey, I mean, the way Logan Gilbert's pitching, he looks pretty dominant. The way Matt Brash is pitching, he looks obviously dominant. You got the reigning Cy Young in the American League. You know, I mean, if that's your top three, I'm totally fine with that. And people forget this is a Mariner baseball team that at one point last year with 4 games to go was 3.5 games out behind the Astros for the freaking West.
That's right.
Last year. People forgot about that because there was so much focus on the damn wild card. So I think the gap has closed considerably. If you're asking me who would I put my money on, I'd probably take the Mariners just because I like long shots more than
I do
favorites.
It's not even a long shot, really, at plus 400.
Right, but it's more so than the Astros.
Correct,
that's
correct.
For sure. I mean, if you're asking me, you know, who makes you more money, I mean, clearly it's the Mariners. But if you put a pistol in my head and said, who wins the West? I would say Houston wins the West.
I would agree with you, but in order to put your money on the Mariners, you have to at least think there's a legitimate shot they can do it, right? Or else,
I do think
or
there's
else
a legitimate
you're just
shot.
Pissing your money away, right?
Well,
if you think there's no chance of them winning the West.
For anybody to say there's no legitimate, and that's just, that's stupid. That's not even worth talking about, right? Because they were 3.5 games out with 4 games a year ago, and they've added Matt Brash, and they've added Suarez, and they've added Winker, and they've added Munoz, and they've added Robbie Ray. A team that was 3.5 games out with 4 games to go has apparently gotten better than they were a year ago.
And the Astros have subtracted Carlos Correa.
Yeah, they look a little weaker. I mean, I don't know if Correa is going to be the difference between winning 100 and then winning 95, right? I mean, they could have guys step up and pick up that slack for sure. I think that a team like the Mariners could have used Carlos Correa more than a team like Houston, because Houston already has established answers and the Mariners don't. But like I told you earlier today, if your point is that the gap has closed and maybe even closed considerably, I would roll with you on that.
And I threw a poll out. I've got an update on said poll.
Oh, you do?
You want an update on
you
got
to give me a second
said,
to find the little deal
I'll
here.
I'll read
so.
It here.
Yeah,
if you were to put
slack into my old age
if
here,
you
man.
Were to put a sizable investment down on one of these wagers, where would you put your money?
Okay.
Update on the poll.
Astros, minus 200 to win the West. I just checked the odds right when I put this poll out. Mariners plus 475 to win the West. So they're under 5-1 now to win the West. 80-20 on the Mariners. I just think that there are a lot of people in this city that last year were like, okay, maybe like me, right? I was like, okay, they're not going to go to the playoffs. I am playing for 2022.
Right.
But they did show me in September that maybe they were a little closer than I anticipated that they were. And so going into the season with the additions they made, I mean, this was the year, and they have done nothing to show me in the first 2 weeks that they're not that team that we hoped that they would be.
Oh, totally. And, you know, I wonder for folks out there what it will take to get them to kind of really get fired up about this baseball team. I think it's 12 games in, and there's a lot of people that just say, hey, wake me up in July, right, or wake me up in June. And I totally understand that, right? Like in 2001, when you had that great crowd from the opener on, they had made the playoffs in 2000 and got to Game 6 of the ALCS. So they were already there when they went into 2001. But, you know, I don't know. Last year's push obviously was not enough to get 35,000 fans a game in the seats. They dropped attendance considerably after the opener, but last night they drew just over 9,300, which is the third lowest crowd in the history of this building, going back to 2000. So I was a little bit surprised that of all the years where they would have a crowd like that, it would be this year. So I don't know. I mean, I think we can sit here, Dick, and try to explain away why the Mariners got the crowd they got last night, but there's probably 15 different reasons for it.
Yeah, and I'm just really excited to see what this stadium's going to look like when, and I'm not even going to say if, I'm going to say when this team is significantly over 500 in July leading up to the trade deadline. Maybe even this team is in first place, or if not in first place, certainly in second place and in the wild card lead,
right,
basically. Then what does it look like? Not on a Friday, Saturday. I mean, those you're going to have
those
for those games in July. What's it going to look like on a night like this? A Thursday night, July 15th or what have you, when it's 75 degrees outside, can we expect 25 to 30? I think we probably can.
I don't know why you can't. I mean, I think that's a pretty reasonable number. Yeah, totally. I mean, there's no school, right? And that's why baseball sometimes for people is king, because you can watch it every single day when you're not in school in June and July and August and early September. So I absolutely think that. But I also think this, that last night, and I was about to tweet this out, last night showed you that this franchise, in the DNA of the sports fan of this city, still has a lot of work to do. They just do.
Of course.
When you don't make the playoffs for 20 years, when you're that far removed from the last great team, when you're still pumping memories from 27 years ago, when you, I mean, honestly, I'm not trying to be a smart aleck
here,
but when you have a whole generation of fans that grew up without really anything to root for baseball-wise, there's a tremendous amount of work to do. I saw some research the other day that says that the Mariner audience on Root Sports, like, you know, 70% of it's 55 and over. I don't know how many young people are watching baseball. I mean, you got a kid, you tell me. How fired up are your son and daughter to watch Mariner baseball?
They're not.
They're not.
They're not.
Right?
No.
And that's got to change.
That's got to change.
And there's one way to do it. They got to win a lot.
They got to win a lot. They got to make it exciting. And the game has got to be more exciting as well. And maybe the Mariners winning, and maybe that will influence some of the younger generation to watch them. But the game is just... It's so, I mean, you're if you have the NBA playoffs on and you're watching the last 5 minutes of a stadium going absolutely bonkers, and then you flip over to a baseball game, one of 162, and the pace is one-tenth of what it is, and it's just harder for a 12 to 25-year-old to stick with that.
Yeah, and that bothers me, to be honest with you. And I'm not saying that your son is wrong to watch what he's watching. First of all, he can watch whatever the hell he damn well pleases.
I mean, he likes the Mariners, but they like to go to the game. They don't really like to watch it.
Right, but he has no basketball team. And I'm not saying he's wrong. I mean, again, this is you're talking about a 12-year-old kid that is more interested in a league that we don't have versus a league and a team that we do have, right?
Yeah.
He's more fired up for that. And maybe that kind of comes from his pops because his dad's a big basketball fan.
But I watch the Mariners all the time.
But you love basketball,
I
right? Basketball is your sport more than baseball. You've admitted that, and that's fine. I'm just saying that if I'm John Stanton and I hear Dick Fain go on the air and say, my son is more fired up for playoff basketball in a league where we don't have any representation versus Mariner baseball in a league where we have a team in his backyard, I'm like, wow, how do we fix that, right? Like, that's on my plate of things to fix, and the only way to do it is to win games. You can do the caravan, you can market, you can do the moose, you can have players go to schools and sign autographs and things like that. This is a long slog.
Yes.
It really is. And everybody wants it to happen overnight with this fan base. It's just not going to. So what I'm curious about, Dick, if these guys get off to a start, let's say they're 35-20 in the first 55 games of the year, and we're sitting here in the middle of early part of June before school's out, and it's a Thursday, Wednesday night, are we going to start to see this crowd start to inflate game by game, week by week?
I think we are. I mean, we saw it before. We saw it 25 years ago. Now, it took forever in 1995, but once they got there, they didn't leave for years, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we had good attendance all the way from the end of 95 all the way through 2002, 2003. They were still getting good fans. The winning will come. I think there is. You mentioned, telling John Stanton about my son or any other kid that's that age that wants to see more action. I mean, that a lot of it's just a problem with the sport. That this new generation has got to find a way to fall in love with this sport, because the NBA is such a pick up your phone and watch that highlight, league, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can pick up our phone and we can watch in 10 seconds Ja Morant throw down an absolutely crazy jam in traffic over three guys, and that 15-year-olds just dig that stuff, right? I mean, do they dig the third baseman making a great play in the hole and throwing to first?
Right.
Not really. Do they really dig a home run?
I don't know.
I mean, unless it's like a 500-foot moonshot. I mean, It's just there's more, and I've heard Ian talk about this as well, that his son grew up in an era of watching sports on YouTube, watching sports on the highlight reel, not sitting and watching SportsCenter for an hour to get all the, you know, all of what's going on in the day of sports. And basketball is just better for that.
Part of it is a sport problem. I mean, you got Albert Pujols closing in on 700 home runs, and I feel like it's not really that big a deal to the country. I mean, you know, a chase like this back in the day was a gigantic deal. You got Miguel Cabrera is one hit away from 3,000, and it doesn't really feel like it's that big a deal. I don't know, man. Maybe it's the information age, and back in the day there was one way to do it, and that was radio or TV if you were born later, but I don't know. I mean, part of it is a sport, for sure. All right, we'll get a break. We're going to try and talk some dogs. Is that allowed here on Kyle Seager Appreciation
Day?
Yes, sir. And by the way, it's 5:39. We have yet to play our Kyle Seager highlight montage for a $50 gift card. We have one more opportunity left. Taco Time, John Howie, Georgetown Beer, Simply Seattle. When you hear the Kyle Seager highlight montage, be the 15th caller to 286-9595, and you win your pick of any gift card you want from those four fine establishments right here on Sports Radio 93.3 KJR-FM.
Clauburn out towards center field. Mullins picking up speed off the wall. Kyle Seager coming through again.
2-2 to Seager. Fly ball, right field, deep.
Wow.
Gone! There we go!
He socks this out to right field. Kyle Seager is leaving the yard.
There you go, base hit. Might be extras. That's going to get two, and the Mariners are right back in it. Coming up big, Kyle Seager, two-run double. Fly ball, deep to right center field. Giddy up, bye-bye! Two-run homer, Kyle Seager, 2-0 Mariners. Look at this baby fly out of here. Home run, Kyle Seager.
Seager out to right field. No doubt about this one. Way gone.
Your home for Seattle's best NFL draft coverage and the 2022 NFL Draft in crystal clear stereo. Sports Radio 93.3 KJR-FM. Now back to Softy and Dick.
All right, we've been waiting to have this guy on for a while now. I've been waiting to have him on since the Stanford game last year, and I was told, nope, let him become a sophomore. Let this guy kind of marinate a little bit on the football team, and then you can have him on the radio show. Well, he was a star that day against Stanford. His dad was a star. That's how old we are,
yes,
by the way.
Yes, he was.
I remember watching this guy's pops at the Rose Bowl when I was 18 years old.
Back of the end zone,
back
baby.
Of the end
back
zone.
Back of the end zone.
Tapping his way to a touchdown against the Michigan Wolverines. This guy wasn't even a freaking thought in his dad's eyeball back then. And here he is, one of the star linebackers for UW, Carson Bruner, joining us on the radio show. Carson, how are you, pal? What's going on?
Hey, I'm doing great. How about you?
Good. Hey, I got to ask you a question. When you watch, like, YouTube videos of your dad in that Rose Bowl against Michigan, does that look like it was 500 years ago?
Just about. Especially the new stadium and how they had the track out there, too. It's just kind of crazy thinking that was there at one point.
What do you guys need to do to get it back to the buzz? I'm not talking about undefeated seasons right now. I'm talking about getting the buzz back where Husky football is back to where it was when your dad was playing.
I feel like the biggest thing with that is just as a team and through our players is just believing. Obviously, last year we had our ups and downs and our struggles with everything going on. And this year, especially with the new coaching staff coming in, I mean, they just got here in January. And already the trust that I know has been built with our linebacker room, with our coach, Coach Inge, as well as talking with other players and the trust that they've already built and that connection they built with those coaches, I feel like we're off to a really good start here with just starting off in the spring. But I feel like the biggest thing, too, is believing that we are still one of those top teams in the Pac-12 and can compete for the Pac-12 championship.
Well, Carson Bruner is with us on the radio show. And go back to that Stanford game last year, man. 16 tackles, a sack and a half, a forced fumble, Pac-12 defensive player of the week, all that. Tell me about what that moment, what that game meant to you, man.
Yeah, man, it was pretty special. Obviously, that was my first start. Got the opportunity. Coach Bob Gregory told me that Thursday practice right before that I'll be starting that game. And that was some not surprising news, but just crazy news, knowing that I'm going to be a starter for the University of Washington, because that's something that I've always dreamed about as a kid, especially with my dad playing here, my mom cheering here. It's just been a family school, and being season ticket holders for a while, I've always dreamed about running out that tunnel into Husky Stadium and stuff like that. But even with it being an away game, it's just special being able to be out there on the field and compete. And just with the game plan that the coaches put in, I put trust in that. And then going out there, I just trust in my abilities and just went out there and just did my best.
You mentioned Coach Inge there a couple moments ago. Tell me what he's all about.
Man, he's something special. He is something special. If you sit down with him and 5 minutes in, you'll be dying laughing, and he's a character. He's an awesome coach. I've learned already a lot about just our playbook and just about football and especially life. We go up there a lot after our practices and kind of meet with him to go over the film, but the amount of just life stories and kind of college stories when he played over there at Iowa that he would tell us, it's something special. And he just kind of built that connection, those relationships with us in this short period of time. And man, it's truly a blessing having him as our inside linebacker coach.
Yeah, well, no doubt. He actually played in a bowl game against UW back in the day, back in the 90s when he was at Iowa. So you guys can yak about that. But how much did the new coach – yeah, exactly. Carson Bruner with us from UW. How much do you think Carson, Coach DeBoer, Grubb, Morrell, Inge, all of them – how much did they have to kind of maybe restart the culture and fix the atmosphere around the locker room? Or was that maybe not as fractured as people thought it was when they took over?
Yeah, I would say I don't think it was as fractured as many claim it was. I mean, the only people that really know what really happened all with last season and with the struggles and all that are the people that are in the locker room, us players. So with this coaching staff coming in, obviously with us being 4-8 last year, they were like, all right, so some things definitely need to change, and we need to kind of ramp it up a little bit. And us players, we know obviously last year was unacceptable, and we're doing everything that we can to make sure that nothing even close to that happens again. But the culture has only grown from last year, has only gotten better. Us as a team, we've gotten way closer with just offensive, defensive players. And me, even as a defensive player, just seeing our offense going out there even this early in spring with a brand-new playbook, with our three quarterbacks competing for the job, and just seeing them even, like, some practices they'll be balling out and kind of scorching us D, and then there'll be a practice where we'll kind of get them. But it's just cool seeing all of us compete out there with this new playbook and everyone just trust into the new coaches that came in, because I feel like that's a big thing for us.
Carson, will the defense schematically look a lot different to Husky fans when they see you guys, or is it similar?
I would say it's pretty similar. There's definitely some different changes, and but mostly like the positions and all that, and kind of like the base defense that we ran last year, it's pretty similar. We have kind of some of the similar calls, so it wasn't too hard kind of understand the playbook. Obviously different terms and kind of techniques with some of that, but all of us, we've adapted well with it and really just put the trust in the coaches and abilities in ourselves to go out there and compete and perform. So it's been going pretty good so far.
How much does your dad coach you up, or does he leave you alone?
He's actually good about kind of staying back and just letting me do my thing. There'll be times where I'll be talking with him, and obviously with him as a tight end, he knows about linebacker, but, I mean, he didn't play linebacker in college and in the league and stuff. So he kind of stays back. He's not one of those helicopter dads trying to control me and be like, hey, you got to do this, you got to do that. It's do your own thing. He'll give me the advice time to time that definitely is needed and is greatly appreciated from him, because obviously what he did at the University of Washington, as well as going and playing 14 years in the league, that's something that I can only dream about doing. And obviously I got to that first step, being able to be here and playing at UW. And obviously that next step is going to the league. But that's something that he keeps reminding me and just be like, hey, like we don't need to focus about that right now. Focus about today, focus about what practice you have today or whatever workout we have and just go day by day. And if that comes, then that comes.
I love it. Well, look, I got some advice for you if you want my advice. You know, I've been doing this for a long time, so I just got one piece of advice for you. You can write this down, and if you forget, I can text it to you. It's very simple. You ready?
Perfect. Let's hear it.
Kill the quarterback.
I love it.
All right?
I love it.
Go get me some quarterbacks. We're fired up for you, man. Seriously, we are so fired up to watch you play starting in September. Great stuff, and let's talk soon, all right?
Thanks, man.
Perfect. Sounds good. Thank you, guys.
You got it, man. He was good. Carson Bruner us on the radio show. He was a star last year as a freshman and looking to take that next step, become a star as a sophomore. We're going to break. Grant Cohen, by the way, is going to join us and talk about what the hell is going on with Deebo Samuel down in San Francisco. Coming up next, live from Jimmy's on First on a Kyle Seager Appreciation Day, by the way. Chuck Tinton was our last winner. He grabbed the John Howie gift card. So Dustin Abel, Jerry Berry, that's his name, Jerry Berry, and Chuck Tinton. All won gift cards on the radio show because they appreciate Kyle Seager unlike somebody else in town. We're going to break. Headlines coming up, and then Grant Cohen from SI talking about Deebo Samuel right here live from Jimmy's on Sports Radio 93.3 KJR-FM.
Now from the Star Rentals Sports Desk, your 93.3 KJR-FM sports headlines.
All righty, boys and girls, headlines on all of a sudden a rainy Thursday night.
It's pouring
right here on Sports Radio 93.3 KJR FM. Headlines are brought to you by friends at VenueKings.com.
Idiot.
You want to head to the game tonight, by the way. That's from Boogie Nights.
Oh, that's
when
right.
He tried to with Marky Mark.
Yeah,
remember that?
He was all pissed off in the car.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Not really.
Yeah.
I did not $14.
Watch it with your kid, by the way. It's a great family movie.
No.
Oh, may I see it? $14 gets you in the door at VenueKings.com for tonight's game. Mariners looking for a four-game winning streak. 4-2 win last night over Texas. 17-6 in there. What is that? I can't even read that. I just got some gibberish on there. Never mind that.
You can type it out, you know.
I don't even know what that is. Logan Gilbert, 6 2/3, 6 hits, no runs, 4 Ks last night, a .54 ERA. It says 17-6.
Six last something games.
In their last three games. That doesn't
even
make any sense.
You probably meant to say 20.
Oh, no. No, that's their runs. They've outscored the opponent 17-6 in the last three games. Why that's relevant, I don't know. It's just kind of fun to say.
Helps your run differential so people can't rip on
you
in
August.
There you
go. That's right.
All right, T-Wolves lead the Grizz right now. 58-46. Are the two-seed Grizz going to go down 2-1 in this series? We will see. D'Angelo Russell, 15 points leading the way for Minnesota.
Chet Holmgren, who weighs about 17 pounds. He needs to put some weight on, doesn't
he?
How many? 20 pounds, you think? 25 pounds?
Well, it depends on how they want to use him. He can float around the perimeter right now, but he can't do anything other than that.
I'm telling you, I saw a picture of him today on Twitter, and it looked like something out of Close Encounters. He is a beanpole.
Yep.
He's going to the NBA.
Yes, he is. Arizona GM Steve Keim says there's zero chance that Arizona trades Kyler Murray. Similarly, the 49ers say they have zero intention of trading Deebo Samuel. But wait a second, intention, isn't that what Pete Carroll and John Snyder said?
Exactly what they
words,
said.
They use the same word.
What that means is we don't want to trade him. Doesn't mean he doesn't want out of here.
That's right.
Our intention to keep him. His intention may be to move to Mars. We got no idea. Baseball scoreboard, Marlins in the eighth lead the Cardinals 5-0. Pittsburgh and Chicago, Cubbies up 3-2 after 5 on the Buccos. Some finals in baseball, the Guardians, which is still weird to say. Double up the White Sox 6-3. Tigers over the Yankees 3-0. And how about this? The Yankees intentionally walking Miguel Cabrera with a chance for 3,000 hits, and they got hammered by the Tiger faithful. That is final. Tigers win 3-0. Mets 6, Giants 2. Blue Jays beat the Red Sox 3-2.
Just such a Yankee thing to do. And the Storm have reached agreement with Amazon Prime Video to stream nearly the entire season, home and road to the entire state of Washington. So you can watch them on Amazon Prime. You can also watch them on Fox 13.
And the Kraken have won 3 in a row for the first time in franchise history. Goals by Jordan Eberle, Yanni Gord, and Cole Lynn last night. 3-2 win over the best team in the NHL in Colorado. They are 9-7 their last 16 games. They've won 3 in a row again for the first time ever. I just said that. And they got Minnesota tomorrow, 4:30. 5 o'clock face-off right here on Sports Radio 93.3 KJR-FM. It's funny, by the way, we're going to try and make contact with Grant Cohen from SI, covers the Niners for them, and find out about the Deebo Samuel situation, how we thought, I remember you and I talking, that if you're a gambling man, I mean, the Kraken are going to have a really hard time in the final month of the year after they get rid of all these players. And it's been the opposite, right? They get rid of Giordano and company, and they're actually playing better hockey now than they were with all those guys. And I don't know, maybe this is a better question for Tomlinson, maybe even for Furness, but I wonder how much that team, because they had so many guys that were going to get traded at the deadline, right? So many players. And I wonder how many of them were just playing tight because they had no idea if they'd be on the roster or not.
Might have been, and they've added with the addition of Rask and Sprong and now Beniers. I mean, they're just a much better offensive club than they were 3 weeks ago. And watching Beniers in person for the first time like I did last night, just so – you can just tell he's different. He is just so smooth with the puck. It is fantastic to watch.
You think he'll be a first or second ballot Hall of Famer for the Hockey Hall of Fame?
Yeah, first.
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean,
Who goes in first, Beniers or Logan Gilbert? That's my question.
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, Beniers is going to be Gretzky. I mean
– Grant Cohen from SI covers the Niners for that fine establishment, joining us right now on the radio program. Grant, how are you, pal? What's going on?
Hey, man. I'm bad in a thousand. How are you?
We are good. Debo Samuel, talk about what's going on. Why is he upset? Why does he want out?
Because they lowballed him. I mean, they can say whatever they want to say. They can say he doesn't want to play running back or he doesn't like California. But they're not offering him a competitive offer. California has high taxes. It seems like he would prefer to go elsewhere. And it seems like there's a lot of teams that will be more than happy to pay him what he's worth. So I think the Niners played themselves on this one.
He was that offense last year. Why did they lowball him?
Because that's what the 49ers do. I don't know how familiar you are with Parag Marate. He's been in the organization for 22 years. He's in charge of contract negotiations, the salary cap, all of it. And he's just a stickler. He finds ways to try to win every deal. And that's why the Niners traded Buckner a couple of years ago. Like, they're not the kind of organization that always keeps their top level players. They'll keep like the tier two players and drive off people like Debo and DeForest Buckner, as opposed to like the Rams who keep all their stars. So it's a little bit different over here in the Bay.
Okay, so let me ask you this: what does your crystal ball tell you? Do the Niners cave and give Debo what he's looking for, or does he play for somebody else next year?
I mean, they should cave and give him what he's looking for because he would. Why do you need that distraction in your locker room? But I don't know. I mean, what are they doing with Jimmy Garoppolo right now? Not trading Jimmy Garoppolo because they're certain that Jimmy's worth 2 second-round picks. And they're going to hold out until they get it. They can do the same thing with Debo. They can say Debo's worth 2 first-round picks, and we're going to hold on to him until we get it. No one's going to give 2 first-round picks for Debo Samuel. So they can do the same thing where they hold on to an asset too long, get nothing for him, and just upset everyone. That's kind of what they do right now.
Does Debo have a legitimate beef saying, hey, if you're going to use me as a running back and a wide receiver, then you got to pay me a top wide receiver money and give me a little running back bump? Because, I mean, playing running back's going to shorten his career by 3 or 4 years probably.
It sounds like the Niners gave him a Christian Kirk offer. The Niners didn't really react to the market. The wide receiver market exploded. They thought they were going to take care of him with like $19 million a year. That's not going to cut it anymore. You got to give him $60 million guaranteed and like $25 million a year. And they just didn't react. And that's kind of how they are. They don't pivot to what's happening in the moment. And it's costing them. I don't think they really thought Debo Samuel would just nuke the trade discussions. But if they don't trade him before the draft, I'd be really curious to see what Debo does. I wouldn't be surprised if he takes it to like DEFCON 7. You know what I mean? Like I think he wants to get traded now, and he feels like the draft is the deadline because that's when the Niners can get something back for him.
What's DEFCON 7? Like he'll never play a game again for the Niners as long as he's under contract? He'll skip every mini camp, every OTA, every practice, every game until he's gone?
Yeah, something like that. Something like the Le'Veon Bell situation. I'd be interested to see. Yeah.
Gotcha. Well, Grant Cohen is with us from SI, covers the Niners for them. And, you know, it's funny that you're talking about this Niner organization like they're a dumpster fire, yet they've been to the Super Bowl and the NFC Championship, right, in 2 of the last 3-4 years. I'm trying to figure this out, how these guys even are able to get that far.
I mean, they have a really good roster, but they really haven't figured out the most important position. Kyle Shanahan's in year 6, and they haven't figured out the quarterback spot. How does that happen? And really, this offseason, they had 2 objectives. Trade Jimmy Garoppolo and extend Debo Samuel. And so far, they haven't traded Jimmy Garoppolo, and they're going to trade Debo Samuel. That sounds like an F offseason. So, I mean, they've done a lot of good things, but they can't get over the hump. And, like, it really seems like the Rams have taken the play away from them in the division.
Well, if Jimmy G wasn't damaged goods right now, would he already be gone?
I mean, what's he really worth? It seems to me what happened is not that he got hurt. It's that the quarterback market got flooded. All of a sudden, Deshaun Watson was available and Matt Ryan was available. And maybe the Niners didn't anticipate that. I think they thought that at a certain point, Jimmy Garoppolo was going to be the quarterback that was the best one on the market. And that's never, ever, 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 ever going to happen. There's always going to be a quarterback who's better than Jimmy on the market. Right now, it's Kyler Murray. I mean, if the Panthers, if Matt Rhule is that desperate and he needs someone like a quarterback to save his job, it's not Jimmy, it's Kyler Murray. So it is all, or Baker. There's always going to be someone better than him, and the Niners are just in denial about it, and they're going to hold on until they either get what they think he's worth, which is never going to happen, or he just leaves and they'll get a comp pick for him.
All right, Grant Cohn with us. Grant, one more before I let you go. Grant covers the Niners for SI.com down there, and I'm curious just to get your thoughts from 1,000 miles away on how Niner fans, how you reacted to the Russell Wilson trade to Denver.
I think the Niner fans finally feel like they're going to beat the Seahawks for a change. But, I mean, I wouldn't pencil that in. The Niners lost to the Seahawks when they were bad anyway. There's something about the Seahawks. But all of a sudden, it seems like the Seahawks are, like, in total rebuild mode. But then again, if the Niners trade Debo, aren't the Niners in rebuild mode too? Like, who are the Niners to look down at the Seahawks? It seems like the Seahawks and the Niners are in kind of similar positions.
Right. That's a great question, man. We'll find out. Grant, good stuff. Appreciate this, buddy. Going to be fun to follow this, and we'll see if something happens next week in the draft. Thanks, pal.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
All right, see you, buddy. You know, it's a good point about Debo Samuel. If they trade him, are they in total rebuild mode? I have a hard time, honestly, for as great a player as Debo Samuel is. And I understand your point about how he was their entire offense last year, so maybe this is a unique situation. But to say that you lose a wide receiver like that and that means you're in total rebuild mode, I don't know if I buy that. They still have a decent offensive line. They have a good defense down there. I still think the Niners are maybe a 9 or a 10-win team without Debo Samuel. But with Debo Samuel, we saw what happened. They went to the NFC Championship game a year ago. So, I don't know. I mean, it's just – I'm just – I love DK Metcalf, man, in Seattle, and I love what the guy does. I just always feel like paying a wide receiver that kind of money should be the last thing on your bucket list, not the first thing when it comes to building a roster.
If San Francisco's winning 9 or 10, who's playing quarterback for them?
Maybe Trey Lance. Who knows? I don't know. Maybe it's Jimmy Garoppolo.
I mean, I'll take the under on that right now if Debo's gone, just because I don't know who they give the ball to that's dynamic and who's playing quarterback.
Well, but you got the draft and you got more acquisitions between now and then. I mean, presumably if they get rid of Debo Samuel, they'll go get somebody in the draft to take his spot at wide receiver, right? Maybe they trade up and grab one of those big studs that we're talking about at wide receiver. I mean, it's only April 21st. The season's not starting for 4.5 months. So I just... in general terms, again, don't look at wide receivers as really that important. And maybe I should. Maybe I'm underselling, you know, what DK Metcalf would mean for the Seahawks football team. You know, I think that, let's say you start Drew Locke, for example, or you start Geno Smith. I think Drew Locke or Geno Smith, you're talking about a football team next year that is between 4 and 6, 7 wins maybe at the most. I don't know if DK Metcalf changes that much for the Seahawks next year, whether he's on the roster or not.
I agree with you. I just think Debo is way more important to San Francisco than DK is to Seattle.
I agree with that.
Debo Samuel had 1,405 receiving yards and another almost 400 rushing yards and 8 touchdowns on the ground.
Right. No, I know that. But I think that, again, that you get other guys involved and you go out and you replace them with somebody else. You're not going from 100 to 0 without Debo Samuel. You might go from 100 to 60 or 100 to 50, and there's going to be a drop. There's no question about it. I don't know if the Niners are an NFC championship team again without Debo Samuel. I can probably say that they're not an NFC championship
team
without Debo Samuel. But, well, winning 9 games may not be enough to make the playoffs. Winning 9 games may get you the 8 or 9 seed next year in the NFC. I just think the Seahawks have got to be really careful here with DK Metcalf because they have so many other holes to fill on this football team, and my concern is twofold about DK. My concern, number one, is that he'll never become the player he can be playing for Pete Carroll. And number two, by the time it does make sense to have DK Metcalf making $28 million on the roster, it's 3 or 4 years down the road when they're good again, and he's going to be a free agent again if he signs a 3 or 4 year deal.
Which is exactly why you should seriously consider trading DK Metcalf. For those exact reasons you just mentioned. A, they're not ready to win.
Yeah.
B, he doesn't fit with Pete Carroll's style.
You know what it's like, man? It's like having a baseball team that's awful with a great closer. What's the point?
What's the point?
What's the point in having a great closer?
Why do you need Edwin Diaz if you're going to win 65 games?
And
right?
I understand that DK Metcalf is better than Edwin Diaz, right? That DK Metcalf in football is better than Edwin Diaz when he was here in baseball. I totally understand that DK Metcalf, if they use him right, might be the premier wide receiver, one of the top two or three in the NFL. But I just think, again, that you can see a football team going 5-12 with DK Metcalf, and I can see the Seahawks going 5-12 without DK Metcalf,
right?
I mean, this is all about building the line of scrimmage, and to do that, they need capital. Maybe they have enough capital already to do that. And maybe with the salary cap going up exponentially the next 3 or 4 years, maybe down the road it won't be that big a deal. And if there's ever a year to sign a DK Metcalf or a time, it's right now, because they're not committing big dollars to a quarterback. They probably will not be, honestly, Dick, committing big dollars to a quarterback for at least 4 or 5 years.
That's right. Now, the one argument that I would say that would be really legitimate on keeping DK Metcalf is, if you really think Drew Lock's your guy, you can't take away his number one target and expect him to succeed this year.
If you don't think he's the guy long-term, then you can. If you do think Drew Lock's the guy long-term, then yeah, you want to give him every tool to succeed, and that means getting DK Metcalf back. I generally agree with the folks that say, and we'll ask Mike Holmgren next segment, by the way, what he thinks will happen with DK. I think they'll find a way to get him back. I mean, to draft a guy like that, when everybody else ignored him because of the neck problem. Pete Carroll took his shirt off for the guy, for God's sakes, at the combine to go that far to get the guy in the second round, to have lightning in a bottle and this unbelievable golden goose egg fall in your lap. Giving him up after 3 years seems ludicrous that they would do something like that.
And I'm not saying trade him for nothing.
Yeah.
I'm saying,
of course,
if you can get Tyreek,
it better be a haul.
Get Tyreek Hill value, you trade him.
It's got to be a haul. Well, we'll ask Mike Holmgren about that coming up next. Lots of stuff to go over with the coach. We'll talk about the Deebo Samuel deal as well with Mike, his thoughts on, I want to ask him flat out, what excites him more, Geno Smith or Drew Lock playing quarterback for the Seahawks next year? Mike Holmgren, the coach, will join us. We are live from Jimmy's on First, hanging out across the street from T-Mobile Park before the M's and Rangers in Game 3. Mike Holmgren next on Sports Radio KJR.